Why work harder when you can work smarter? I mean, we're all looking for ways to make work and life just a little bit easier. Enter the Ford F-150 truck. It helps you get the job done in the smartest way possible. Have you seen the Pro Access tailgate? It improves access to the bed and cargo, which makes it easier to load in tight spaces. Think about the time and hassle you'll save with that feature alone. And I haven't even mentioned the mobile power source, Pro Power On Board. You can power up to 7.2 kilowatts outside your F-150. You're already thinking about all the ways you can put that to use, aren't you? See, I told you, smarter. Tough this smart can only be called F-150. Find your local Ford dealer at Ford.com. Pro Access tailgate available starting spring 2024. See owner's manual for important operating instructions. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and we're doing something unprecedented today, something we've never done before on Talk is Jericho, and something that's maybe have never been done before in the podcast world. We are teaming up here with Kevin Smith, my good friend, and his Smodcast to do a two-part watch-along of the Bad News Bears. That's right. We're doing act one of the movie right here on Talk is Jericho, and as soon as it ends, head to Smodcast for part two. That'll be the last half of the movie. We'll tell you exactly where to queue up and then when to hit pause so you can switch to Smodcast. But since it's Friday, you know what we got to do before we get to one of my favorite movies of all time. We got to go to one of my favorite joke tellers of all time. That's right. Time for the critically acclaimed Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan here. You know, I'm sitting with your buddy Tadao. I'm on the tour bus. About to take off from L.A. to San Francisco on my tour, Tenderness. Shameless plug again. But I got to, you know why Saddam Hussein liked the quadratic equation? Because he was a fan of weapons of mass destruction. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
I mean, come on. How could you not like that one? Weapons of math instruction. Did you get that? Thanks, Duff. Never missed a Friday ever, even while he's on his tour. Cheap plug of Tenderness, cheap plug, and whatever. All the great stuff that's been going on. Tenderness is actually number one on the Heat Seekers charts on the Billboard charts. So congratulations to Duff for that. All right, it's the return of Kevin Smith and the Bad News Bears right here on Talk is Jericho starting now. All right, so here we are, Talk is Jericho, and one of the things that we've been enjoying is kind of the movie retrospectives. We had a Warriors one recently, and we did Outsiders. This is the first time ever we're going to combine it with a watch-along, which we've had here, Kiss Me, Stefano, the Park, and Sleepaway Camp 2, with Kevin Smith, and we're going to try some kind of a multimedia, multi-generational time warp skip. We're going to do part one here on Talk is Jericho, and then part two on the Smodcast, which I've never done before.
It's a two-parter, kids.
It's a two-parter.
It's just like when, back in the day, Laverne and Shirley started on Happy Days, and then they go over and to Laverne and Shirley, and you're like, holy shit. Or Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High Power Hour together, which is how I discovered that show on PBS.
They would do a power on PBS?
PBS is where I saw it. Like, you kids saw it on...
Yeah, CBC.
We saw it, when I saw it, it was on public broadcasting, it was PBS. Some kids got taught it in classrooms, but I saw it on PBS. Can you imagine? It was a teaching tool.
Really?
That's how I bought my entire set of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I bought, when Clerks happened, like, I got some scratch, I paid off the movie and shit like that. One of the first things I did was, like, I want the honest-to-goodness set of Degrassi on VHS, because I had taped all the episodes, and then when I was going to film school up in Vancouver... a roommate introduced me to the notion that there was a Degrassi I hadn't seen, School's Out, the movie.
Oh, great.
And this is pre-internet.
Tessa Campanelli.
Oh, one of the greatest lines in television history, yep. Man. Tessa Campanelli.
Yeah.
Tessa Campanelli. What? I mean, That show was on CBC?
Yeah. So you're seeing that. And one thing I always
heard. Did you watch it live?
Yes. You have to understand, and we'll get back to your story quickly, but Degrassi was huge, obviously a pop culture phenomenon in Canada. Mm-hmm. So school's out. It was like watching the last season of Game of Thrones.
Right.
Like, we knew it was coming to an end.
This was the end game of Degrassi.
End game of Degrassi. and you had, you know, whatever, if they have 20 episodes a year, whatever, but it was half an hour, half an hour, half an hour, all leading up to this 2 hour.
It was a movie, special. A flat-out TV movie.
School's out, Saturday night, the final Degrassi. So everyone was gathered around. I was probably 21 years old, but this was everything.
Because it had been, at this point, you got to figure about like at least 10 years of a franchise between the kids of Degrassi, mm-hmm. Degrassi Junior High, and Degrassi High.
And basically the same age as me. I might have been a year or two older. So I grew up with these guys like Wheels to this day, still one of my favorite characters in television history. Yeah. Like, just loved Wheels. Neil Hope was his name. He's not with us anymore. God bless.
We lost him, sadly.
We lost him. But to see kind of the whole finale. And it was Empire Strikes Back with no Return of the Jedi. It was a real dark finale.
The movie itself. When I finally saw it, like, because the roommate that I was living with had told me, but he found out, like, I was living there for about, like, a month. And one day, like, I was heading to this thing that had BC Movie Magic, it was called, where they were like, look at a Chapman Crane. Look at, like, the movie industry. And as a bonus, take photos and get autographs with the kids of Degrassi, which the show had been off the air for a long time. Mm. I think maybe they were in the incarnation of Degrassi Talks, where they just picked five or six.
So what year is this you're talking about?
When I went to film school, so circa 92.
Okay, gotcha. So, yeah, so the show ended about 91 or so, yeah.
So they were kind of on the, like, remember Degrassi Kids?
Yeah.
Like, but it wasn't happening. But Degrassi Talks, I think, was happening at that point. So I was like, I'm going, what? Are you kidding me? The chance to meet Stacey Mastichian? Like, this is nuts.
Spike, right? No, Stacey Mastichian was
Caitlin,
yeah.
So I tell my roommate, he's like, where are you going? I said, I'm going to this thing called BC Movie Magic, man, because, like, you know, the kids at Degrassi are going to be there. And this dude was older than me, like a legit adult. And he was like, you like Degrassi? I was like, yeah. And he knew I was from America. I was like, yeah, man, it's like one of the reasons I came to film school here. I love this show. And he goes, you know, they didn't shoot it here. I was like, oh, no, they shot it in Canada, though. It's a Canadian show. It's like a jewel in the Canadian crown. And he revealed himself to be a Degrassi nerd and how deeply he watched it and stuff. And so we were trading episodes, favorite moments. And then he was like, and then he said, you know, and then, of course, Tessa Campanelli, you were Tessa Campanelli. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, you don't know that? And I was like, what is that? And he goes, school's out. And I said, what is that? And as I imagine, a Degrassi, this would be like being a Marvel fan who didn't know about Infinity War and Endgame.
Right.
You're like, oh, I love those movies. And then, like, well, did you like Infinity War? You must have loved that. And I'm like, and what is this now?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, what? And
that was the big finale.
Oh, my God. What were you, for those that don't follow this, they never cursed on the TV show.
Well, so CBC was a Canadian channel. Back in those days, you would get CBC. For example, Winnipeg would be CTV and CKND, and there'd be a UPW, kind of a public channel. Mm-hmm. So you'd have four channels. Or there might be a French channel, too, if you have five. And the French channel you would watch, it would all be French, obviously, and you would see boobs. And you would call your friend, go, did you see boobs on the French channel? This is before boobs were very easily accessible on every, you know, computer around.
And your phone.
And your phone and whatever. So if you saw a boob, like a boob sighting.
You marked it.
Marked it huge. And that's why we always loved, like, Benny Hill and Monty Python, because you would get boobs on the CBC via the BBC. So yeah. I think
pre-cable boobs were huge.
Yes. And I think CBC's ratings rules were
a little more liberal.
So you could swear and see boobs, but they would never use it.
Right.
So in that point in time, when you heard on School's Out, you know, Saturday night at 9 p.m., Tessa Campanelli, your Tessa Campanelli, within the realm of CBC, it's legal, but you never heard it. So it was like, oh my gosh, there was, you know, no HBO, no cable. It was like real swearing.
Right.
Like it got through the censors.
They went there.
Yeah.
It's a powerful experience.
It is. So Tessa, so Joey's with Caitlin.
Yep.
And she dumps him because he's in Tessa Campanelli, which you saw a side boob as well.
That's true. There's a little bit of that.
A little bit of boobage there.
They can get away with that on CBC.
You could. And then Wheels
gets in the accident.
Drinking and driving. Gets in an accident where Lucy loses her eye and gets taken away to jail. The end.
Yes.
Basically, like, what a horrible finish.
And that was the end of, like, you'd grown up with these kids.
Yes.
And it wasn't like, oh, next week we'll wrap it up in a a more fun way.
No, like they're
that was it. They're like, that's life, kids.
End of the road, right? And I think, like, I remember when I went to college, this was pre, you know, word processors. I had a typewriter that my mom bought basically out of the want ads in the newspaper, Winnipeg Free Press, and it's a typewriter. And when you're doing a paper, you cannot have whiteout or a correction tape. Like, you know, whiteout. You,
when you're handing a paper
in. If you make a mistake, you white it out. Right. Or you can. If you made a mistake, you had to start from scratch. And baby. So many times on Sunday night at, you know, 10 o'clock at night, super late on my last assignment, trying to get it done. But that's when Degrassi was on. And so many times I'd be watching Degrassi while I'm typing this thing. And lo and behold, I'd hit an E instead of an A because the zit remedy was on. I'd be like, fuck, I hate this show. Crumple it up, start again. But that was my relationship with Degrassi. Like, it was, talk about event TV. You did not miss an episode of Degrassi.
That's so why I needed to find that movie.
Right. So like, you needed to find, like, it.
Oh my God, this exists. And so when I had money from Clerks, I called up.
And when you say money, it's like $5,000.
Yeah, nothing.
Right.
But this, well, actually, is, I mean, that's the thing. I overpaid. I called up. There was no internet. Nope. There was no label that, like, you know, oh, we distributed the whole Degrassi series. They weren't even putting whole series on video at that point, right? So the only place I could track it down was this school, like, educational materials company.
Right.
So I called up and I was like, do you have the Degrassi series on VHS? They were like, yes. I was like, I would like to buy all of them. They're like, what school do you represent? I was like, I don't. I'm just, I'm me. I'm a fan.
The school of hard knocks.
And they were like, well, you know, these tapes are like $99 a piece and you've got this many tapes. And it was something, it was $6,000.
Gosh.
Like, it was a crazy figure where, you know, I didn't even blink. I was like, this is why I made Clerks. So I could buy what in my mind were these insanely fine, polished, incredibly packaged episodes of Degrassi. I had just been recording on a VHS like 3 hour, 2 hours worth at an SP or something like that. So in my mind, I'm like, this shit's going to look as good as the video store. And they sent me the plainest, janest videos. Like, all of Degrassi, at least Degrassi Junior High had the art from the show.
Right.
Degrassi High was just like somebody had typed on a piece of paper the episode
like
names,
a black
like that.
Oh, cover.
So plain. So plain.
Remember,
and I wanted to display these proudly, like a trophy.
You were expecting to have some kind of a cover art, a picture, something.
Kind of dope. But I did have Schools Out, and that became my go-to porn for a long time because I was like, oh my
God. You finally got to see. It was the lost episode.
It was, and it was everything that Ken, that was the roommate's name, it was everything that Ken had promised. I was like, this is truly Degrassi's greatest moment. And that was the template for Degrassi the Next Generation, because you walked away from Schools Out going, holy shit, they went there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they would do on the entire Next Generation. And it became their marketing campaign, Degrassi, it goes there.
It goes there.
They just had no compunction about, like, let's just take it as real as possible, man. Like, let's do a storyline where they're giving out bracelets for blowjobs, because that's what we read about in the New York Times.
The late 90s version, whereas in the late 80s, it was about AIDS testing and, like, you know, one guy, Claude, had AIDS.
Yes.
You know, or a Spike got pregnant.
Yes.
You know, that's kind of the rules of the day. And once again, you know, and we'll get to what we're going to talk about today, but those types of social issues where everyone's gathering around, you know, the fireplace, so to speak, that stuff is not going to happen anymore.
Why?
Because the world has changed. You can see that stuff, you know, online, like you said, Google this and the other thing. But when they talked about AIDS, pregnancy, you know, moving on to blowjobs, blowjob parties, people, you know, having drunk driving crashes,
right.
You would only see that on Degrassi Junior High. You know, like an after school special that was even harder hitting than that.
Right.
It still amazes me that they were able to get away with that in the late 80s, early 90s.
It is the earmark of a better system of government that Degrassi came from America and 90210. I mean, Degrassi came from Canada, 90210 came from America.
Right.
Because essentially 90210 is them going, oh, let's make that Degrassi show.
Yeah.
But let's set it in Beverly Hills and everyone needs to be impossibly pretty. And then
Because, like, the thing, like, Degrassi, like besides Caitlin Mystician,
they look like real kids.
Caitlin, there was always a hot girl in school, but other than that, it was just a bunch of
real
normal looking
people.
Dudes. Joey had zits everywhere. Snake was like kind of balding and like 9 feet tall, and Wheels had the thick glasses. Like you wouldn't get those type of, the twins were kind of, you know, not super hot. Like, you know what I mean? Like you wouldn't find that in a Hollywood production.
Right.
You know,
real. They were committed to like holding up a mirror.
Yeah.
To the culture. This so much real. So that even when you get to Degrassi, the Next Generation, like I would say the first few years, they're still committed to like, these are real looking kids and shit. And then those real looking kids got real attractive.
They get Drake.
They started getting more real looking, better looking kids and shit. But then it became a combo of like, look, we're going to tell real stories. It's just easier to do it if we got some pretty kids.
But see, this is what I like about the fact, and I think this does all relate. This is not just some kind of a reaching kind of a segue. The fact that we love Degrassi, and when I say we, it's you and I, coming from different areas of the country, coming from different countries even, we appreciated it because it was real. And that's one of the reasons why I think we both love the movie that we're talking about today, which is Bad News Bears.
Yes.
Because, you know, once again, you see Hollywood teams, and it's kind of become a Hollywood cliche or standard. When Bad News Bears came out, and we're pretty much the same age, 1976, so we're 5-6 years old, maybe seven by the time we saw it. Yeah, me too.
I was six.
Me too. But maybe we saw it. I didn't see it in the theater. So.
I did. You
did? You?
Yes.
But these kids were real. Like this was the baseball team that I played on,
right.
That you played on. It's like the Shakespearean everyman, you know, team that everybody could relate
to. This team was the only reason I played Little League, because I was like, that's what baseball is?
Right.
I want to play this baseball. And then you get there and you realize you're not allowed to scream vulgarities. You're not allowed to fight with your coach and drink beer with him and shit. And you're like, this ain't Little League at all, man.
By the way, before, like, obviously we'll get into this. If you played this movie today out of context, it is so super politically incorrect.
There are definitely moments where you're like, holy
There God. Is N-words. There is the F-word. The other one about sexual proclivity.
Yeah.
There is drinking and driving. There's underage drinking.
This could be a movie.
Fat shaming.
Would trigger everybody.
Everybody would be so pissed off.
In the now, man. But what's very important about this movie culturally, I think particularly for people our age, is this movie taught us at a young age how to lose.
Right.
And that's something that every generation after us wasn't really taught. You got to remember, after us is the T-ball generation, where everybody gets a trophy just for participating. This movie was made in an era, and it forged a nation of children that were like, oh, like sometimes you lose. In fact, most times you lose. But that's okay, because like the Bad News Bears were cool and they lost. So sometimes it ain't bad to be the
because
loser.
It's so funny because the movie is set up, and I'm sure there's alternate endings. Sometimes I know there was. But, you know, spoiler alert, when they get to the very end of the inning and Kelly Leak gets up and he's the killer hitter and this all guys on deck, you know, if he gets in, they win the game or tie the game, and he gets tagged out at home. And the funny thing is, when he gets tagged at home, there's no drama. He comes in, he slides, boom, out. There's no like,
the music just falls off. And
you're out.
Look at the kids' reactions. And it's basically, they let the performance carry the moment.
Right.
And the performance is, oh.
It's, what?
It's done.
Really?
Yeah. And
they lost?
And that's like, you got to remember, that was our generation got the Bad News Bears. Next generation got Mighty Ducks.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens to the Ducks at the end?
They win.
Of course they do.
They're right.
Because you can't, who's going to go see a movie where a bunch of children are unhappy because they lost? But we were raised in that. And that's what made our generation, I think, and I'm starting to sound like an old man, but that's what made our generation okay to fail.
But see, the thing is,
that movie taught me it was okay to fail.
You sound like an old man, but also for people that don't understand, the 70s was a different world. Like, you're talking about a world where Archie Bunker and George Jefferson and Cracker and Honky and the word that N-word that we still can't say, that was uttered on a minutely basis, per se.
Casual racism.
And it was a harder time. Was the world more open to it, or have we progressed or regressed in that moment, in that way? Because when you're talking about the Bad News Bears, there's nothing if you're looking at the Mighty Ducks with Gordon Bombay.
Yes, that was his name. Instance.
He's a good-looking guy. He's well-dressed. He's got couth.
He's a success in his life without the Ducks.
Right. You look at Walter Matthau as Buttermaker. /Boilermaker/Butter Churner.
They give him Butter Crud.
They give him so many names in this that you're not really sure what his real name is. He's a bum. He even says, I'm a bum. I'm a third rate washed up baseball player. What do you want to talk to me for?
He cleans pools poorly.
Right.
For a living and drives around a shitbox.
And he's not a lovable character. Like, as we go through this, there's so many moments where he goes, in wrestling terms, he does a babyface turn and a heel face turn and a babyface turn and a heel face. You can never get a read on this guy until the last 10 minutes where he finally just says, listen, the kid's got to play. But he's not a lovable character.
I'm going to stop you right there just because I got to pay this compliment because it just rocked my world. And it may be because I'm like just blazing and stuff, or maybe just because it's a moment in time. But you're so diversified in everything you do that you were like, you know, it's like the, in wrestling, it's a this and a this and a this. And there was such a disconnect where I'm like, oh, he knows about wrestling as well. And then about 5 seconds later, I was like, oh, yeah, of course he does.
Can I just say one quick segue quickly? You mentioned being blasted. I'm not a weed guy, but I enjoy the smell, I love coming over to your place because I get super high off the contact. Here's my all-time favorite. Well, now we've had so many others, but at the time, Kevin Smith, Chris Jericho moment where we did the podcast. And the first time we did it was my podcast, but we did it at your house. And we started at, like, let's say 7 o'clock, sundown's at 8. We're still going at like almost at 9. Problem was, when we started at 7, we didn't turn lights on. We're still us. And at about 8:30 or 8:45, I was like, dude, like, do you want to turn some lights on? And they're like,
it's dark
in here. it's been dark for an hour.
It was kind of romantic.
That's kind of romantic. I was like, oh, I love this.
All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well. But I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway, so even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield, and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer.
Hey, Engelbert.
What?
There's chocolate all over this ball.
Look, Mr. Buttermaker, quit bugging me about my food. People are always bugging me about it. My shrink says that's why I'm so fat. So you're not doing me any good, so just quit it.
Okay.
We're talking about the Bad News Bears, and just, it's a moment in time of filmmaking. But once again, 70s filmmaking, and you're much more of an auteur and knowing kind of the movie history.
I was a movie fan.
Movie fanatic. Like, this movie
shot by Michael Ritchie. Directed by the great Michael Ritchie. If, as people see, when we start this, you'll be able to watch along. We'll tell you, go. And you'll be able to, like, watch line it up and watch with us. But Michael Ritchie, who later on will give us Fletch, and another wonderful movie that never gets its praise sung. It was an HBO movie called The Positively True Adventures of the Texas Cheerleader Murdering Mom with Holly Hunter.
He directed that.
He directed Smile before this movie, The Candidate with Robert Redford. Then he comes to The Bad News Bears. And The Bad News Bears is this very nearly, in fact, it is a perfect film.
I agree.
An absolute snapshot of an era. But it doesn't at the same time feel, I mean, it's dated because you look at it and it looks like the 70s, but still kind of works today, in as much as, like, kids fail.
Let me tell you the reason why it works today. It holds up for this reason. Mm. When my son Ash played baseball a couple of years ago, his team was terrible. I showed him the Bad News Bears. He really enjoyed it. My daughter Sierra played baseball this year. Softball, Dad. There's a difference. Sorry. Softball. I showed her Bad News Bears. Her team wasn't as terrible, but kids can relate to this ragtag group of kids. Whether it's 70s, 80s, 90s, or now, you still can relate to it as a kid. And that's why it's eternal and evergreen to me.
It's also like it's an underdog story and everybody loves that. But what I'd like to point out is that this is the template from which all other underdog story movies were stolen. Like, right. You got to remember, in the same period that we got this, we got Rocky about 6 months later.
Good point. Who also loses.
Who also loses. Two movies in which the titular stars don't do what you're supposed to do in the third act. And that's how we were raised. Like, our cinematic heroes lost.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like, oh, shit, like, you need a happy third act. Like, it wasn't, success wasn't the goal.
Mm-hmm.
A good time was, you know, mm-hmm. like, you could always walk away. And thank God I've had this movie. Because unlike Jericho, who's had nothing but never-ending success, I have tasted bitter failure. Like, you know, everyone loves Mallrats now, but when we did it, like, no. And, you know,
I remember that, too, like in 94, reading Entertainment Weekly. Like, boy, Smith missed the mark on this one.
Huge.
And I'm like, what did you miss?
People hated them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 10 years later, suddenly people are like, oh, I like that movie. And now, right. 20 years on, you know, hey, they just referenced it in Captain Marvel. I'm like, yeah, I guess we were right.
He did okay after all, yeah.
But I couldn't have survived. You know, I got introduced to the world through my first film, Clerks, and it was overpraised. And then Mallrats, my second film, was like over-destroyed. Yeah. And so that could have broken, you know, a delicate creative psyche. But I was raised on this movie, so I was okay to lose. Even lately, like Yoga Hosers was one of the last movies I made. People hated it. And I wasn't like, I quit, I'm leaving. This, I'm not meant for this sort of thing. I was just like, yeah, the Bears lost too.
Because they were the heroes of the movie. And everything, they had everything going for them to win. And then the coach turns the tide and says, we're taking the best players out because I want the shitty players.
Spoilers, spoilers.
Listen, this is 1976. It's 43 years later. Point being, like, I watched it this morning just to get back into it again. Every time I watch it, I just love it. Put Miguel in, like the little Mexican dudes that don't speak English, and like Ogilvy's terrified to go in.
Oh my God, you're burying the.
Are we gonna go into? Okay,
don't,
sorry.
Don't. What did they say? Don't leave it in the locker room. Take it to the field. We got to fill all this commentary time, and you're doing brilliant work.
Point being, when they get to the end of the movie,
yeah, spoilers.
Everything is leading towards the victory.
Yes.
All the things that you would see nowadays, like if it was, I don't know, let's say Guardians of the Galaxy, like, you know, the top three heroes would be mortally wounded. They put, like, you know, the baby Groot out there, and Groot would shoot the laser through the laser beam shields. That's what I was looking for. And they would explode the, you know, evil planet and everyone would win.
Right.
In our version, he would try and shoot the laser through the shields. It would close, and the evil planet would then disintegrate him, and end of the movie.
This, in that way, Bears has an Empire Strikes Back ending, but it predates Empire Strikes Back by at least 2 years.
It does.
This was a period that, like, if you weren't alive for it, I'm sure people look back on it and be like, why are these movies so depressing in the 70s? But they never occurred to us as depressing. Like, it never occurred to me that, like, oh, they lost in that. Is depressing, like, especially because I was there with them on the journey. Number one, they shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Right.
Like, the fact that they made it to where they made
it. The victory, like, getting uniforms was a victory. Never mind playing a game and winning one game and getting all the way to the final. That's a victory to anybody. And in this day, we get that, but in this day and age, because they didn't go all the way with it, it would be like, oh, well, they lost. And how depressing is this? Like you said, but it's not depressing. It's uplifting. And at the end, they still stick it to the man. You know, it's, you know what this reminds me? Speaking of sticking to the man,
yeah.
It's School of Rock.
Yeah.
Is based on the Bad News Bears.
Which kind of makes sense that they then asked Richard Linklater to direct the Bad News Bears remake after School of Rock.
You cannot do in 2005.
No, you can't do in any era. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, look, baseball and Little League is eternal. You know, like, it'll be with us forever until the world splits in twain. This movie has a perfectly memorable name. You would imagine somewhere somebody's going, come on, we could do this again.
Yeah.
but you can't.
It's a moment in time. It's funny.
Oh,
it's just,
my God. It's such a moment in
today
time.
Today I heard they're doing a live All in the Family Jefferson
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, who's playing Archie Bunker? And it's Woody Harrelson.
Right.
How is Woody going to get away with the stuff that Archie Bunker said? Well, they said he's going to be okay with it. No. You can't say those things in 2019 and expect people to accept it the same way. There's going to be a backlash automatically.
I if I remember my All in the Family correctly, they threw around the word colored quite a bit.
They did. And also had the N-word too.
I wonder if they're choosing a script that perhaps doesn't hit those issues.
But then once again,
maybe they'll go for the women's lib issues.
But then
instead.
you don't get the crux of what that show was. Like, I was watching Caddyshack the other day when Ted Knight, who's still one of the best heels of all time, Judge Smales, comes in there and
didn't want to do it. Felt I owed it to him.
World needs to stick a suit, Danny. He gives his like cleats or whatever to the guy to sharpen them or whatever the hell he's doing. It's a black dude. And then the Catholic priest comes in and goes, did you hear the one about the colored man? And they're laughing about it. And the shoe guy's like, colored man?
Colored what? He's grinding the cleats.
Yeah, like, so even in the 70s, colored was not acceptable. Yeah. Nor should it be. That's a terrible name, right?
Yeah.
But I think, like you said, like if you go back into this time, the 70s was a strange era that seems like a very weird repulsive worm that you look at from the 2019 era and go, how did that even exist?
Didn't you ever get the impression growing up in the 70s that we had missed history as well?
As far as?
Like, you know, like Watergate and Vietnam were happening kind of concurrent when we were like absolute infants and shit.
Right.
By the time we were aware of the world and stuff, we had just kind of, Vietnam, you just missed it. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
And like, oh, Nixon, that just happened. And you missed it. It's over. So I remember when we grew up, you know, I felt like, oh, all the f-ing important shit's happened. Like, you'd go to school and you'd have a history textbook and you'd be like, yeah, it kind of stops with, like, Vietnam and Nixon because nothing
was going.
worthwhile has happened.
I remember the Bicentennial. Yes. And I also remember the...
For those who are like, what's that? Bicentennial was in 1976. This country was 200 years old. And we threw this year-long ape shit
huge
party.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it was a real great opportunity to sell souvenirs and beer cans with different logos on them.
And every band had a, like, there's a classic Kiss 76 poster where they're dressed as, like, the spirit of 76.
Yes.
But I remember, let me see if you were on this tip as well. To me, social commentary at the time was dictated to me by Cracked Magazine and Mad Magazine.
Yes.
And I remember waiting at Bigelow's Drugstore in Winnipeg, Manitoba, right down the street from where I lived on Wordsworth Way, waiting. When's the new Crack magazine coming out? Mm. And when Crack came out, there would be, and Mad as well, there were parodies of movies, TV shows, and a lot of social commentary about OPEC.
Yes.
Which was the, like, the Saudi oil and all this stuff. And I remember, like, I got more into the Bad News Bears because of the parodies in Cracked and Mad, and they kept pushing it. Like, the Bad News Bears had a lot of steam with the Cracked generation for me back in those days.
Particularly because they knew their audience, and their audience, like, kids.
Stuff. Was us, right? Yeah.
Mad Magazine's mascot, of course, What Me Worry,
Alfred E. Newman.
Let's see how deep you go on Cracked. Who was their guy?
Sylvester P. Smythe.
Oh, my God. I are the same person. You are what I would have been if I tried in life.
did you know Sylvester P. Smythe?
Of course.
They both had an initial in the middle.
Yes. Oh, my God. I love Cracked. And who was the guy that did all their covers? John Severin.
And it was a big deal when Don Martin, who was the seminal Mad artist,
jumped over.
He pulled a Jericho and jumped from WWE to AEW. He jumped from Mad to Cracked, but it didn't look the same. Like, you can't have those weird Don Martin, big-eared, crazy hairs. Like, if you're reading Cracked magazine, you want to see Nanny Dickering, who had the huge boobs.
You are.
Dude, we are the same guy.
And that is, like, I just love, it's one thing. You're happy to find somebody who appreciated Mad Magazine. Mm-hmm. You're really happy to find somebody who appreciated
Cracked. Because that was like kind of the minor league version of Mad. But I like Cracked better.
Minor league would have been crazy.
Crazy.
Which
magazine.
I think was Marvel's.
Really?
I think they owned it.
And there was another one. This is really obscure. It was called Plop.
Yes! I remember that. Oh my
Where
God.
Were you shopping that we had the Plop?
We had a
crazy
magazine store, man. Yeah. Like, I guess they went deep on Mad and Cracked because they sold and stuff. And I remember they gave Plop a try, but Plop was gone pretty quick.
It's funny because a few years ago, yeah, Plop, it's not a good name. I went to a place down in Santa Monica and it was cracked.com. They were making a resurgence, but it was online and not just a website, but kind of a network. I don't know if it still exists, but
still does.
It does.
Do these deep dive videos on
okay
and they've done written pieces. I haven't looked lately, but last I
a few
looked,
years ago there was a crack
happening,
and I just thought that was so cool that it still existed in some way, shape, or
keeping
form.
Keeping the brand alive.
Yeah, because to me, like, I love, like I said, dude, like, how many, I don't know, how many things was I so into as an 8-year-old, 9-year-old kid waiting on the curb for the press truck to show up with the boxes of like new magazines. It's like, did you open that box yet? What's in the box? Like that sort of feeling is not existent anymore either.
Anticipation.
Like, yeah. And like, it's like going to a record store, like, oh, the new Iron Maiden record, it should be coming out this month. Let me go to the record store. It's not there. I'll go back next week. It's not there. All those things
now
are
like,
gone.
Pre-order it and you'll have it.
Yeah. Or just go before. On iTunes and there it is.
Yeah.
But I still, like, you know, obviously I'm sure my dad said the same. Like, you know, I went used to go to the pictures and there was a trailer and a cartoon and two features and you get a popcorn and a Pepsi for 25 cents.
Right.
Like, that's our version of this. Right. But like we're saying, I think Bad News Bears was one of the seminal movies for our generation in that time frame. For so many reasons, but mostly because it was real.
Very real. And again, this movie gave me permission to be me for the rest of my life. This movie is deep in my DNA.
Yeah.
This isn't just some movie that I enjoyed this as a kid. You know, the way most people kind of treat movies. And I treat most movies the same way. But this one goes deep in my DNA and helped shape and foment who I would become and how I'd perceive the world and how it's okay to not be number one. It's
right.
Okay to not even place.
And
sometimes.
To be like, you know, like Tanner was kind of a hero for me.
Yeah.
I remember, like,
I don't have a Randall in Clerks without Tanner in Bad News Bears.
I remember playing baseball, like you said, over exaggerating, like if someone made a mistake or if I made a mistake, throwing your glove into the ground.
Right.
Right. And probably saying crud. I believe I would even say crud.
It was pretty harsh for a Canadian.
Here's why you should be getting Factor meals. They're always delivered fresh, never frozen. They're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and delicious. They're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. And if you go to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use my promo code TIJ50, you'll get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box. Plus, how good does this sound? Parmesan and sun-dried tomato chicken penne with roasted green beans. That's what I had last week before heading out to AEW. Factor makes eating delicious, quick, and easy, which is exactly what I need, especially on travel days. I ate it right out of the Factor packaging as well, so no cleanup afterwards. So you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need, and you can pause and reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. So head to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use code TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code TIJ50 at factormeals.com/TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
I'm going to kill you. I'm going to knock your head down so far you're going to have to take off your hat. Beat the crud out of you.
Oh, yeah.
Take on all the Yankees after this. Hey, I'm going to kick
your butt. Little shit. You owe me 30 cents for that burrito. Put you in the mouth.
Little shit.
Well, that's one bird down and 11 to go, but come to think of it, they thanks. Nobody ever stuck up for me before.
Well, Lupus, if you wiped your nose once in a while, people wouldn't give you so much crud all the time.
Should we start it off and kind of go through some of the stuff here? Because I know you know a lot of trivia about this.
Oh, I bet you do too.
Well, you know, I know a little bit. I know a little bit of stuff. I know the names of all the guys. And I'll say one thing too. The fact this movie was so good and monumental, it's kind of like it took me straight into Bad News Bears and Breaking Train, which people say suck. I love it.
He because, still holds up.
Yeah, like the love of Bad News Bears, like if you're shooting a rocket, like it gave me enough momentum to like, okay, and I got Breaking Training and I can dig that one too. I don't like Bad News Bears in Japan.
Right.
But, you know, there's so many interesting characters and moments in this movie. And watching it again, it's like, it's definitely, you know, top 10, top 20 movies for me of all time, for sure.
The big difference between Bad News Bears and then Bad News Bears and Breaking Training, you see right away off the bat, cinematography. Bad News Bears is an insanely well-shot movie that looks like a lot of it handheld. It feels like a documentary, like you're in it. And then Bad News Bears and Breaking Training instantly feels like a sitcom. It's like, oh, because Michael Ritchie didn't direct it.
Right.
Somebody else altogether. Then you're like, wait, where's Buttermaker? Wait, where's Amanda?
Right.
That was the heart of the last movie.
Who's Jimmy Bale?
Yes.
William Devane? What?
But then that's where they get you, like, they were smart to lean into the Kelly League dad story.
Well, I think...
That's memorable.
Yes.
As is, let them play. Mm, let them
that's the
play.
Classic moment.
Yeah.
I think Kelly League in the Bears, Kelly League and Amanda are the two most interesting characters. And we'll get into it, but Tanner, and also too, I was thinking this morning about Toby Whiteworth. He's kind of like in a Greek play. You have the kind of
what do they call it?
The chorus, who kind of explain what's going on. He's the constant throughout that kind of explains the story when they need somebody to drag them through.
A little bit Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
That's yes, too. Big time.
But
big
he's
time.
More like those cats come in the story and then pop out. But he's there for
he's
the
a constant.
Jump. He's almost honestly. Well, you know what? We'll start the movie.
Let's do it.
And you'll see right away what it is. You line it up, kids. As soon as you see, here, we're going to press play. Right now, it's 1 second in with the Paramount logo.
The Paramount Mountain is there.
And it's about to say the words. We press play.
There you go.
The stars have just encircled the Paramount Mountain. The Paramount logo is on the screen, and we're ready.
And if you don't want to watch this, then go to listen to Dark Side of the Moon at the same time as Wizard of Oz. You'll see that sync up as well. But then go to stop listening to the podcast.
This field still exists. You can go see it.
Where is this field?
It's in the valley. I went there twice since I've lived out here. It's not obviously the same view anymore, but... If you stand in a certain place, it is. They don't have the backstop as we know it.
Right.
That was built for the movie, like where they do the scoring and shit like that. But it was uncanny, and I went there twice. Both times I got real emotional and teared up.
Because let me just say for people who don't know, you're from Jersey.
Yeah.
So you're from the other side of the world.
That
basically.
Font right there, the Bad News Bears, that's called Addled. And when we put together our production company, Viewskew Productions, the Viewskew was written in adult.
Oh,
font.
Wow.
I was like, can I have the Bad News Bears?
Did you shut up? Really?
I did specifically.
So here's the thing. Let's talk a little about Walter Matthau, who like obviously had such a great career in the 50s and 60s. We're not from that generation. My Walter Matthau knowledge completely is Bad News Bears.
Yeah.
Retroactive to Odd Couple, where he plays the slob.
Right. Where's Oscar Madison?
Oscar Madison.
In the cinematic version.
Cinematic.
Not
the most
well-known version of the Odd Couple.
Right. Not Jack Klugman's version. And then, of course, making a resurgence in Grumpy Old Men, which he basically played Boilermaker in this. I love the concept of he's just like he's probably our age there. And he looks like he's fucking 70, drunk, bad dyed hair, big rummy nose.
That was when like adults looked like adults.
They did.
This dude does look like an adult. And this movie's got this weird, wonderful pedigree, like Polly Platt's got her name in the credits. Polly Platt works heavily with, what's his name? A Paper Moon director, whose name has escaped me because I'm blazed on it.
But Paper Moon was what Tatum O'Neill was in.
And that's how it happens, man.
Oh.
Like, he talks to her about, like, hey, there's this baseball movie. You could totally do this. Like, and so she's like, all right.
Because she had just won an Oscar for Paper Moon, correct?
Yes.
Now, I did my mandatory 90 seconds of research for this. She was offered $350,000 and points.
On this movie?
On this movie. That's how hot she was at the time.
I had her on the podcast.
No way.
Which it hasn't aired yet. Because I was waiting because she had a podcast. We were going to do the same thing.
Start
on this and go over there.
Is she cool?
Very. And she brought her daughter on and stuff. And we talked about a lot of things. But, of course, we did a lot of Bears talk. And that was the moment in time.
For the Bears?
In terms of like, she couldn't have been in a better position.
Oh, right. As a, what, like a 12-year-old kid or whatever she was.
And this movie came into her life and she wasn't baseball savvy at all. Peter Bogdanovich, that's the director.
Okay, gotcha.
So she goes walking on the beach with Peter Bogdanovich to talk about, well, no, that was for Paper Moon. That's how she got the job with Paper Moon. But she talked to him and he was like,
you can transpose the story. I'll never know the difference.
Somebody might. This guy here who plays Whitewood, who is Toby's dad.
Toby's dad.
You could argue Toby might be the main character because he predicates everything. If Whitewood is not Toby's dad, Whitewood is not nearly as invested
in making sure there's a team that can play on,
and the Bad News Bears don't exist.
Yeah, and I also love the fact that if you look at Toby, he looks exactly like James Hetfield in 1981. So that's one of the reasons why I like Toby, because he's got the same kind of hair, the little snubby nose. One quick thing, too, if you see it earlier, it said written by Bill Lancaster.
Yeah, yeah.
That is Burt Lancaster's son, who based this story on his relationship with his dad.
Really?
Had some kind of a weird relationship with his dad. Because as we'll see later on, there's a really evil dad in this, played by Vic Morrow, who incidentally died in a Twilight Zone movie accident. But yeah, so like you said, the Whitewood connection, had there been no Whitewood, there would be no Bad News Bears.
If there's no Toby, particularly.
Right.
If there's no Toby, there's no movie at all. Because then Bob Whitewood is just a local politician who has no need to put together the movie.
Quick segue. Have you ever watched Big Bang Theory?
Yeah.
Where they say that Indiana Jones, had he not been in Raiders of the Lost Ark, would not have mattered.
The whole movie still happens. Yes.
That's not true.
Is that right?
There's one point where, because Tot, the guy whose face melts at the end, when Indy gets in the private jet and they start going to the red line he's following Indy to Tibet. Had there been no Indy, he would not have been able to follow him to Tibet. You see that because Indy's on the private jet on the plane.
That's true. And
he's behind the newspaper.
I guess it presupposes that like they would have eventually figured out that Marion Ravenwood had the...
Maybe, but in my world, had Indy not gotten the plane, Tot wouldn't know where to go. So Big Bang Theory can suck it.
You're like, yeah, they just finished their run.
Yeah,
I always wanted to make sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was waiting until they were finished the show to release that information.
To come out.
So Vic Morrow is here.
We just saw there.
Yeah, he's just saying, like, you guys should just quit. This is ridiculous because Whitewood sues the league.
This is an affirmative action story.
Yes.
Essentially.
To get his son into the league, even though they're a bunch of kind of miscreants. And I was watching this around. I said, I have to point this out to Kevin. Engelbert
right.
wearing the half Gilligan's hat.
Right. Bucket hat without the bucket.
The bucket. That thing existed only in about 70. The lifespan of that was 76 to 77, mid 78 tops. And here's then you never saw it again.
Wait, so what is this meant to do? Shield your eyes and that's it?
You would still get heat stroke. It would still burn your scalp. But
it's basically like a glorified headband.
Yeah, exactly.
These kids were so f-ing real. This is why this movie works, man. Mm-hmm. Michael Ritchie and co. found a bunch of kids. They didn't just cast California kids. In fact, there's a lot of kids like Mike Engelberg here. He was from Texas.
Oh my God. Tanner's got the worst, like, New York. Go back to your beer.
Jersey.
Oh, Jersey.
Total Jersey
accent. Go back to your beer.
I was filled with so much home state pride when I found out that he was.
It's obvious. You took my accent.
Oh my God.
What about Tatum O'Neal? Where's she from?
Tatum O'Neal was out here.
She gives a little bit like, I know I don't got too much, but what I got don't feel too good.
Yeah, yeah. She leaned into a bit of a
little New York.
Don't tell
my parents I said that.
These kids, though, are from, like, all over. They didn't want to make... They just didn't want to cast TV kids, movie kids.
It's great, Disney though. Kids. That's why it works. I almost wondered if, like, at some point, like, James Hetfield, look at Whitewood there.
Look at three toeheads right next to each
other.
Yes,
and my son's
a fourth one with lupus. Like, lupus. No, you don't get blonder than this
Is anybody's child. Name actually lupus? That's a disease, right?
And yet, for us, he was a hero.
He was a hero. Quinn something or other. Quinn Cummings or something like that.
Cleveland there, Joyce Van Patten.
Oh.
Unsung hero of this movie.
It related to the famous Van Pattens?
Dick Van Patten.
Sister?
Sister, if
gotcha.
I remember
correctly. Because she's got a little bit of the Dick Van Patten, wherever he's from, New York or Boston or whatever. Yeah.
She's got one of my favorite moments happens at the end of this movie. But she's a great character who puts it all on Front Street. She shows no like hiding her like
disdain
for the fact that these f***ers got into the league. Like
hates have, Kelly Leak.
Yes.
Terrible. But you know what? We'll get to the point. Okay. I love this point too, or like Engelbert, like talk about fat shaming. Like he's the fat guy who just eats all the time. You know what I mean? Like you
this
couldn't
was my hero as a kid. You know, they say representation is important. It was so nice to see a fat kid who doesn't get picked on. Or if he does, he gives as good
he
as he
beats
gets.
His ass. Well, let me ask you a question. Obviously, you're a very slim and trim guy. When you were this age, were you a chubby kid?
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha. Totally. So you were like a chubby guy most of your life.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And so this was like, oh, there are other chubby people out there.
Mm. And for me, I was a smaller kid like Tanner. I used to get bullied, but my only recourse was I had balls and mouth and would fight anybody, even if they picked me up and stuck me in a garbage can.
Think like, about it, too. You and I, you grew up in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
I grew up in Jersey.
Right.
Did you ever see any Mexican kids where you were growing
Never.
Up?
Never.
This movie was culturally important to us, yeah. too, because it was like, in other places, kids have friends who aren't white.
And one more. yeah. But I'll do you one better. And this is the God's honest truth. I wrote a chapter about this in my book, mm-hmm. my first book. In high school, I had more little people than black people.
Is that right?
There was two little people, one guy, one girl, and one black dude. So even having Kevin's blowing his nose, great audio. Even he's a podcasting pioneer, ladies and gents.
Next, I'll be eating in the mic.
Then chewing up. Go bottle maker. But to see the diversity of this as well, and this is not diversity 2019 style. We have to make sure of it. This is just the way it was. They cast these kids the way it should have been.
This wasn't like what we used to say in the 80s. That's a Benetton ad where they show like everybody together.
Great call, Benetton.
This was, and I don't even know if it was a pre-designed or, but this.
It feels real if it wasn't.
Diversity.
You know?
Like yeah, I hate to use a buzzword from now, but like this movie introduced diversity to us as kids. Not only are not all the kids not white, there's also a girl in the mix.
Yes.
Like, that's why I'm sure somewhere people are like, oh my God, this movie's just as relevant today. You could totally do this. But
they were doing this for the real reasons. Like you said, yeah, it's just as relevant today, but they didn't try. We need a girl, check this. We need a Mexican cat, check this. I love the fact that Engelbert there gets pissed off and just whips the ball and smashes Boilermaker's front windshield on his car. And you never, and for the rest of the movie, as far as I know, he never gets it fixed.
No. Yeah, whenever you drive around, you still see it.
Smashed forever.
He's already in the hole for this shit. Like, he tells him, like, your parents are going to pay for this.
And he's only doing this because Whitewood is paying him.
Yeah. Which
money.
This is technically a volunteer gig, is my impression that I get from it.
Yeah. And they couldn't find anybody to coach the team, so they found this washed up pool cleaner. He used to be in the minor leagues. Struck out Ted Williams for Vero Beach, 1965 or whatever. So, yeah. So now he's mad because they smashed his. He's not happy about doing this.
No.
You know, you can tell.
And it is kind of like an outrage later on at one point. Not a big outrage, but the kid's like, he says, Whitewood, you're not paying me enough. And then one of the kids is like, he's paying you?
Come here. Got you there. Just get it down. I love how they have the big fundraiser or get to know each other whatever, at the Pizza Hut.
The North Valley League kickoff.
And they're all wearing like suits and ties. Like just total like snotty parents. None of them care about what's going on. I mean, look, who was a suit and tie to the Pizza Hut?
This was a time, too, when the Pizza Hut was relatively new in the world.
Ooh.
Like, I'm going to say 1976, Pizza Hut is only nationally franchised at this point, maybe about in a year, 2 years. So to get this in a movie and showcase it, like, it looks fancy.
This is a good product placement, right?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Huge. And I love that shot in the movie when they do the exterior of the parents walking up. Because Pizza Hut, to me, like, is an image of a happy childhood.
Oh.
Like, whenever I saw Pizza Hut when I was a kid, good times were coming
down. Coming down. So, but for us, it was McDonald's.
Same thing. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, back in the day, when you were invited or told you're going to McDonald's for dinner,
yeah,
like, people nowadays don't understand. Like, it was huge.
Yeah.
It was better than going to Ruth Chris for a 10-year-old kid. Like, yes. McDonald's, what? Now you just go to McDonald's whenever you want. Like, yeah. I'm hungry. Like, McDonald's was a once in a 2 or 3 week or maybe once a month treat.
Very rare
to see that. I love watching Boilermaker here. He's just he now doesn't know about the uniforms, and he goes to see Whitewood in some bar, and Whitewood's half sloshed. He doesn't know he has to get uniforms. He's just not prepared to be a coach and very unlikable at this point.
Walter Matthau plays your grandpa 20 years before he's your grandpa.
Did you ever see his very underrated turn in the movie Dennis the Menace?
Yeah, he played a fantastic Mr. Wilson.
Great Mr. Wilson. We had to put the chiclets in his teeth because he had no teeth. Yes. His teeth got knocked out.
A John Hughes script.
Oh.
Can you imagine?
John Hughes, Midas Touch.
One of my favorite acting turns of his, very short scene, but he was fantastic, in JFK. He's the one that kind of instigates the movie. He has a conversation with Jim Garrison on a plane about the Warren Report.
Really?
He's the one, he's like, you know, that dog don't hunt. It always occurred to me they were trying to dig that shit out of Peppa.
Wow.
Oh, it's such a great performance, Ben. But also, he's in it. And then later on, Jack Lemmon's in it. So they had both of the Odd Couple.
Odd Couple. But to me, and by the way, could I just say quickly that they just had a scene where a Boilermaker not only has open alcohol, he's also got 17 kids riding on the back of a convertible.
Which you wouldn't even, like, A... You couldn't even shoot that today.
No.
Like, legally, they wouldn't let you put 7
unless you had, like, belts going up to, like, cranes, yes, and, like, you know, green screens and stuff.
They'd have to be so secure. But those kids yes, are literally like, kid, just sit here. Yeah. Don't fall off.
Don't worry about it. Hold on.
Here we go.
Quick story. I love JFK, and I love one of my favorites. I have a little bit of a, we talked about this. Who has the best one scene in cinematic history? Mm-hmm. And you could say Alec Baldwin and Glenn Ross. We talked about a few others. The one for me was, I think I told you a story on set. Donald Sutherland.
Yeah.
When I told
you. He's got
you,
a fantastic scene as X. As JFK. X.
And I actually, he was sitting behind me on a plane once, and I happened to have, back in the day when you would carry a DVD player to watch a movie,
right,
JFK in my DVD player. And I said, I loved your turn in JFK. And he kind of gave me the old, like, oh, thanks, buddy. And I'm like, I'm actually watching it right now. And I pulled the damn DVD out and I said, would you sign this? And he was so like, wow, that's really cool. You really are watching. You're not just giving me lip service like, oh, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Like, right. I actually am watching this right now.
And you're like, bro, I'm also Canadian. Just like yourself.
Just like yourself. I'm from the West, Ace, or whatever.
Canadian f***ing royalty.
Okay, so everybody hit pause here for a quick minute.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
All right, so go ahead and hit play now. And how about we're at the part in Bad News Bears where Lupus can't wipe his nose, but he can make a hell of a gin martini for Buttermaker.
The Lupus story that runs this movie is bittersweet as man. They got a lot of mileage out of a kid who doesn't say a lot.
Right. Like
probably of all the kid actors in there, the least experience. And if I've met Lupus in life.
Really?
Yeah.
Like the real Lupus?
Yeah.
Quinn, whatever his
yes,
name is?
Yes. And somebody said, how do you know it's him? And I'm like, well, who would ever claim to be Lupus?
He should claim to be Tanner or Whitewood or whatever.
If he's not, he's doing a great job of pulling it off.
Would you see him at like a convention or something?
I see him generally like at Sundance is where I kind of run.
Why
into
would
him.
Lupus be hanging out at Sundance?
He does. He had a video series. Not at the festival like, I got a film here or something like that, but was like shooting an interview thing.
I wonder about that stuff when you get these child actors. Like, how do you?
I asked him about it. Luke, like, oh my God, you were him, and that movie meant so much to me. Blah blah blah. I said, what was it like to work with Walter Matthau? And if this is the real, you know, Lupus, the real Quinn, he was like, I was a kid. I didn't really know what was going on, but you know, I got the general gist of it. You know, they fed me lines. Mm-hmm. So right off camera, Michael Ritchie would be like, say this. And then I would parrot it. And then I said, what happened with the second movie? Like, why'd you get sick?
He's just at the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, like you didn't get to go on the road trip. And it was, I think, if I remember correctly, a situation of like, you know, we're going to hold out for more money for Lupus.
Oof.
The parents might have.
Lupus's parents were not happy about it.
Might have been earning off of his back.
Yeah.
But he, like, it was, that was like meeting royalty to me.
You know what's funny? I had Will.
Holy shit, man. You are, the foundations of my childhood is built on your back.
You know what's funny? I had Will Wheaton on the show before. Mm. Same thing. Because, you know, Stand By Me.
Yeah.
obviously another one of these type of movies for us, a little bit older. Same thing. I was a kid. They kind of told me to do. I kind of remember it. Don't really know for sure what happened.
Right.
I think when you're a kid this young, it's hard to kind of really, like, what do you really know as a kid actor? Like, these guys aren't studying their lines and going to, like, you know, Shakespearean, like, or Stanislav, you know, acting lessons. They're just doing what they do.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're either natural on camera or you're not.
And they're selling it, man.
Big time. And here we got Jackie O'Haley, who is a future Academy Award winner. Am I right about this?
What did he win for?
Oh, dude, Little Children.
Well, he got nominated, but I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, he was a Academy Award nominated. What he played, it was a pedophile, right?
Yeah. He crushed in that.
Children of the Grave or something? Or
Little Children.
Oh, Little Children. It'd be better than Children of the Grave.
He had a kind of cool moment. Like, you got to remember, like you know, most people probably be, oh, that's Rorschach, you know, because he was Rorschach in the Watchmen movie. He was the new Freddy Krueger.
He was.
When they redid Freddy Krueger. But there was like a 30-year stretch where he was not on camera.
Mm-hmm.
He still worked in production and shit, but he wasn't on camera. But in our childhood, Jackie Earl Haley was like, I'm trying to think about somebody you could compare him to. The Ryan Gosling of his day.
But here's a story that I heard that may or may not be true. You might even remember this. So Little Children, mm-hmm. maybe the movie before Little Children, Crossing Guard.
Yeah.
Crossing Guard, was directed by Sean Penn.
Yeah.
Was Jackie Earl in Crossing Guard?
No.
Or did Sean Penn have something to do with Little Children?
I don't think so.
There's something in there. Hold on. So they did a movie called Breaking Away.
Yeah,
called Bicycling.
Years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then
that was like Bad News Bears era, post Bad News Bears. He was into further adulthood.
Right. Then they did Summer Stock. And during that summer, Sean Penn and Jackie Earl Haley worked together. When Sean did, I'm going to say Crossing Guard, movie buffs will tell me I'm wrong. Whatever the one it was, Sean did a movie and said, the guy for this is Jackie Earl Haley. Find him. Well, he hasn't worked in 25 years. Find him. And he was like a limo driver. And somehow someone tracked him down, brought him in.
Austin or something like that.
Yes, and brought him in for some little part that led to him getting this Oscar nomination.
That's crazy.
For, and I could be completely wrong, but I bet you if you Google it, hit us up at Talk is Jericho, at I Am Jericho, at Kevin Smith, and let us know if we're telling the truth on this. But there was a real good comeback story for Jackie Earl Haley. And I always have an affinity for actors with three names.
I know, man. That and serial killers.
Lee Harvey Oswald, good call. Yeah, exactly.
Presidents, assassinators and stuff. That's it. When you got three
David
names.
Mark David Chapman.
Yes.
The guy who killed Buckwheat, whatever his name was, or shot at Buckwheat. They always have three names. So
Chico's Bail Bonds just happened.
Explain that.
Iconic. Well, this movie's educational. Because when I was a kid, I turned to my father and said, what is that? Because you know, adults were snickering and laughing, and I didn't quite understand. Yeah. And he'd be like, bail bonds? Like, look, here goes Bob Whitewood leaving. The guy who instigated all this just fucks off. He's a political thing.
He fucks off.
He doesn't even watch his kid's first game.
Buttermaker was told, you have to get uniforms. Find a sponsor. It's not a big deal. Other kids have Pizza Hut,
McDonald's,
Denny's.
Denny's, that's right.
And
the
they
Yankees
have
Denny's. Chico's Bail Bonds. I turned to Dad, what is that? He's like, if you go to jail, but like you, before your trial, you get out, you go to a bail bond place. So I was like, why is it funny? And he's like, because you would never put that on the back of a kid's little league jersey. And I was like, thank you. And suddenly I was a little bit smarter because of this movie.
I had the misfortune of going to jail one night here in LA at Hill Street County. You might have heard of that at Hill Street Blues. They have a phone that you have to call to get you bail. And you're calling a bail bondsman. And I literally remember, I wonder if they have the name of
Chico's Bail Bonds. The most famous bail person in the world.
They did not. I did get out of jail. But
the only other cinematic bail bonds company or bondsman I can think of is Midnight Run.
Ooh.
When Joey Pants was the guy who's like, it's a midnight run, for Christ's sake, says the title, and sends Robert De Niro off to find Charles Grodin.
Bail Bonds is so good. So right now the Bad News Bears, they're playing terribly. They've got no chemistry. Boilermaker's drinking beer on the
Ogilvie
bench.
Ogilvie is sitting next to Buttermaker. He is a child actor who is also in Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
Wow.
So he's acted for Scorsese. Scorsese directed
And that's
that.
Much more of a serious movie.
Very
than
serious
one.
Movie. Yeah. But also, he didn't go on to do the TV version because that was a different.
Can we just say there was a TV show
called Alice?
Oh,
based on Alice Doesn't Live Here.
Alice, the diner show,
was based on the Martin Scorsese movie. Wow. That the kid who played Ogilvy was in.
Did you know there's also a television show based on the Bad News Bears?
Of course.
That starred Mino Pelucci.
Yes! My God, deep cuts.
Deep cuts. He was in Voyagers.
I was just going to say.
And what amazing rock and roll video did he star in?
I bet you. Go ahead, hit me.
By Ronnie James Dio.
Oh, he was in that?
Last in Line.
That's just...
He's the guy that goes down in the elevator to hell, and then he pulls the veins out of the demon and escapes.
And that's post...
Post, yeah, this like, is 1984 or so.
That's crazy.
Because when I was a kid, it was Mino Peluce, and Now that I'm much more worldly, it's Mino Peluche.
He was the he was, as you said, the kid from Voyagers.
Yeah, and John Eric Hexum.
Oh my god, that you remember that name is. I'm deep cuts impressed, man. That's
and a terrible point. Fate that happened to John Eric, much like,
Brandon Lee. He was the original Brandon Lee. He put a gun.
He was joking with a prop gun. Hey, look at me. I'm going to kill myself and pull the trigger and the fucking whatever.
Projectile that comes out.
Killed him. John Eric Hexum.
While on set.
Yeah. On Voyagers. Good looking guy too.
Yeah.
So a shout out to the memory of John Eric Hexum right there.
So the TV version of this had Mino Pelucci. It did. I don't think it had any.
Thanks for giving me the pronunciation. Who played a Buttermaker in that?
Jack Weston.
Oh,
from like Heaven Can Wait. Many
redheaded guy, movies. Kind of.
Yes, the guy who it was a. I guess if you were looking for an aggregate, it wasn't a bad choice.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. Kind of similar.
Lupus, I think, was in the TV show.
Like, I feel like I almost have to Google this right now to get some information.
But other than that, like different Engelberg. Well, Engelberg changed.
Engelberg was different all the time, right?
Yeah, by the second movie. It was
and I think he was different in Japan, too.
They had a third one. They were just like, we just need a heavy sick kid. But the first Engelberg, to me, is...
He's the best.
Oh, my God.
His name is like Carl Garofalo or some kind of like Italian guy. Okay, I've got some interesting information here. Oh boy, I got something for you on this one.
Hit me.
Okay, hit me with the best shot. See, Vic Morrow still being a dick, saying just quit the league. You guys suck. Now, once again, we'll say Vic Morrow, probably a great actor. I did not know a lot about Vic because I found out about him.
What was the TV show he was on?
Like the Americans or Rat?
Was it the,
like some kind of an army show or something?
Yeah, the tank show. I forget.
He
Rat Patrol
actually died on set. On the Twilight Zone movie.
While he was, John Landis was directing his segment.
Wow. Yeah. He was decapitated by a helicopter blade.
Also the father of Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Really?
Yeah, that's her dad.
Vic Morrow?
Is Jennifer Jason Leigh's dad.
I thought Vivian Leigh. Oh, Vivian Leigh and Vic Morrow. There really?
Yeah.
I thought it was Tony Curtis. No, that's Jamie Lee Curtis.
That's her dad.
Do you know Jamie Lee Curtis and Jennifer Jason Leigh are stepsisters?
How?
Leigh. Vivian Leigh is Jamie Curtis's mom. Jennifer Jason Leigh with Vic Morrow is...
No, wait. Vivian Leigh is not Jamie Lee Curtis.
Okay, hold on a second.
Lee Curtis's mom is Janet Leigh from Psycho.
Yeah. Well, Vivian Leigh's from the 40s. Got up the wind. Hold on. Yes. There is. Hold on a second. What's...
I'm like, wow.
Is anyone still listening? Hello out there.
They're like, who are these old-timey actors you're talking about?
What was her name? Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
I'm telling you, there's a Jamie Lee Curtis connection. If there's not, I will admit that I'm wrong.
Well, it's Janet Leigh was Jamie Lee Curtis's mom. And
well, who's the
Tony
Lee?
Curtis is her dad.
Okay.
That's where you get Lee Curtis.
Do they look the same? Okay. Jennifer Leigh Morrow. Oh, Morrow. Okay, gotcha.
Vic Morrow. That is her dad, Jennifer Jason Leigh's dad.
Oh, Vic Morrow. Well, where'd the Leigh come from then?
Who's her mom?
Barbara Turner. I guess
that was another actress.
Yeah, but where'd the Leigh come from? Jennifer Jason Leigh? I thought there was a...
Maybe that's like her middle name? And
I guess. I just f***ed all that shit up. Okay, but it doesn't matter because now I've got some more information about the Bad News Bears TV show that I'm going to tell you about right now.
Hit me.
Okay, here we go. I went to the cast... And I've got it here. Jack Warden.
I said Weston. You're
yes.
Right. Jack Warden, my bad.
Buttermaker.
Hold on. Put a pin in that real quick. Ahmad Up the Tree.
Oh, a
controversial moment in 1976.
Yes. And
some white parents in the theater that I saw this movie in, I remember took their kids out.
Why?
Because not only was there a black
naked
kid there,
black kid,
but it was a naked black kid. Can you imagine, dude?
Let me ask you this. So 1976, you're probably 5 years old.
Yeah. Yes. When I see this movie, This movie comes out in, I think, June. I'm about to turn six.
So what, I'm assuming you asked your parents to take you to this?
Yeah.
Did you see a commercial?
Oh, wow. It's like, oh my God, it's kids. And also, to be fair, my parents were movie people. So they would just take us to the movies. My old man, I think, was a real movie buff.
Gotcha.
My mom, not so much, but she went along for the ride. But
gotcha.
My dad loved going.
Take you to whatever.
So this was, we saw everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, anything. You didn't take us to like R-rated shit, but like, this was going to be on the menu regardless because he liked Walter Matthau. The fact that it was a kid's movie as well, he's like, oh my God, it's a twofer.
You know who else used to do that? Eli Roth's parents.
What do you mean?
Eli Roth's dad and mom took him to all the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything, whatever. Like, let's go to the movies tonight. What's on? It doesn't matter. Every movie counts.
Yeah, and then you wonder that, how he wound up, what he,
well, doing, he, I think, what he did. I think his parents took him, I'm going to say The Exorcist, but that's not it. Maybe Alien. Mm-hmm. And he threw up because he got so sick. And his dad took him to the bathroom and cleaned up the puke and said, you're going back to watch the end of the movie, son. And look where he is now.
That'll shape him up.
Let me just say one thing about this, too. Right before this is when Tanner goes, he goes, come on, Tanner, come over here, Buttermaker. And Tanner goes, go back to your beer. Go on, get out of here. Like, the team hates him.
Yeah.
He's, Buttermaker's a fucking asshole. This, to me, is the first glimpse that he's actually a good-hearted guy. When he talks him down, like, come on, Hank Aaron, that 42 Harris, you know about this. Of course you know about it.
Right.
He talks Ahmed or Ahmad.
Yeah.
Which Ahmad. He calls him Ahmed.
He calls him Ahmad.
Ahmad. He talks him out of the tree by basically working him in that, listen, you're just as good as Hank Aaron was at his time, and Ahmed doesn't believe it, but Buttermaker sticks with it. And that's when you see this guy really does care.
He doesn't have to give a shit.
He doesn't.
He hasn't given a shit up until this moment.
Yeah, and you don't like him up until this point. But at this point, you realize this guy, that we have some, there's some hope for him. Okay, so Mino Paluche was
he played Tanner.
Tanner Boyle. How about this one? Corey Feldman.
Oh, that's right. He was on the team.
Reggie. Who had like zero lines in this.
His dad has more lines than he does. Attack Reggie. Attack that ball.
Yeah, the one guy that keeps showing the whole time is Reggie.
He's always there. He's a good supportive dad.
And we have a Shane Butterworth who plays Timmy Lupus, which people call.
So that wasn't the real Lupus.
It was not.
Different Lupus.
But they call him Butterworth sometimes.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And that's about it. There's nobody else. There's a Bill Lazarus. How about this one? A Persephone Silverthorn plays a student in.
Who played Amanda?
Trisha Cast. And Trisha is most known for playing Amanda in the Bad News Bears movie.
So they on the TV show.
This is the TV show.
They never got any of the real kids.
No, none of them.
It wasn't like Animal House had Flounder. Delta House, the Animal House TV spinoff, had Flounder.
Great call, the fact that you remember that.
I remember that captured my imagination. Like, they should do that with all shows. Like, MASH was a TV spinoff of a successful movie.
And much better than the original.
And this got actually a few seasons of the Bad News Bears TV show.
A couple seasons? Well, because you know what? Because kids like us wanted more Bad News Bears.
Yeah.
And when Crack Magazine, you know, didn't, like I said, that really kind of predicated for us how important this was.
Let's look at where we are in the movie. We're 31 minutes into a, how many was that?
An hour. It's 140.
Left. So 140, 30 minutes in. So at the end of act one is when we meet.
140, 60.
Tatum
plus O'Neal. 40 is 100. Yes.
There she is. Right. Amanda Wurlitzer comes into this movie at this point. Heretofore, there's been no mention of this character.
Nothing.
There's been no, like, and mind you, the marketing campaign, you couldn't avoid this.
All around
him
her.
And her.
Hey, they paid her $350 and points. She's the star of the movie.
And she don't come in until the 31-minute mark.
With no mention whatsoever.
And, but once she's in it, like, and your perception of this movie is that she's in every frame because it is so much her story.
Right.
But I think it's really fucking interesting that it took him. You show me another movie where they're going to bring in the second lead 30 minutes into the movie.
I'll show you one.
Go.
How about a movie called Chasing Amy that promoted Jay and Silent Bob that didn't come into the fourth act?
That's true. But you need her to tell the story,
no,
man.
And here's what I love. To this day, they still sell celebrity maps. I'd never heard. Once again, I'm in Winnipeg. What's a celebrity map? A star map? Like, what is this?
That's what I love about this movie, too. It's a cultural guide. And as much as you and I were not from this place, but this was our tutorial on what this place was.
Right.
And how there are similarities and like, oh, we got a Pizza Hut, too. But then there are things like palm trees, you know, like
star maps
and night, like they're playing baseball up till like 6-7 o'clock at night without lights, and star maps absolutely still exist. And I pass them like all the time.
Yeah.
Never once have I bought one because, you know.
But you always think about this. You know why you didn't buy one? Because your house is on it now.
You know what? That's untrue too. I did buy one in 1979. My parents and me and my brother and sister came out here to go. We went to Groman's and shit like that. And I made them stop at a Star Maps joint and I bought a map. Okay. I was looking for Carrie Fisher's house.
Okay. Once again, two very similar cats right here. I first came out, I'm going to say 79 or 80. Mm. We went to Knott's Berry Farm.
Right.
Drove in my parents' motorhome from Winnipeg down. That's a long haul. Went to Knott's Berry Farm. I met Glenn Scarpelli from One Day at a Time.
One Day at a Time.
The blonde girl, Missy from Benson, Missy Gold.
Oh, my God.
And somebody else. And I remember we went, and I remember like, I wish I could get a star map. And we actually stopped at a star map and looking at it. And I'm like looking at all these, like, once again, like, who's, you know, like a Jack Palance? Who the f*** is that? Like, where's Glenn Scarpelli's house?
Right.
But you could actually find them just like she's doing right now, sitting in a lawn chair on the side of the road selling maps. And what this would be for people that don't know is you would look at the map and they would say, well, here's like, you know, Doheny Boulevard and Mulholland. And if you go to this dot, that's, you know, Carrie Fisher's house. And on this dot, there's, you know, Cary Grant's house, you know, whatever it might be.
I went through my map and I was like, okay, Eve Arden. She played the principal in Grease.
Of course.
But
good call.
She was also in Under the Rainbow with Carrie Fisher.
Ooh.
So I was like, if we could stop at Eve Arden's house, I can ask her how I could get in touch with Carrie Fisher. That is how my 9-year-old brain works. Like, I'm sure she'll just give me the information.
Of course. Young it's like stalker. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with Star Trek, and I loved Chekhov.
Right.
And I literally somehow got the address to Paramount Studios, which is what Star Trek was produced by. And I wrote...
also the Bad News Bears.
Okay. I wrote Paramount Studios, care of Walter Koenig, who is Chekhov.
Yeah.
Please... Mr. Koenig, send me a signed picture. Here's my self-addressed ever. Put it in the mail and waited like months after months. Like, fuck, when is he going to send this back? He never did.
No says. No self-addressed stamp envelope salvation for you. Oh, here, look at this shit.
This is when...
One of the greatest lines in the movie. What happened to you? He got in a fight with a seventh grade. Who in seventh grade? The entire seventh grade.
But whoever says it, Engelbertson, the entire seventh grade. Yeah.
He goes, he's got his hands on it. He goes, seventh grade?
Who in seventh grade?
The entire seventh grade.
Do you want to quit playing baseball, Tanner?
Shit, no, I want to play ball.
I think he says crud, no.
Crud, no, I want to play ball.
This is when they decide that Whitewood decides that because they got spanked 26-0, that it's an embarrassment to the team / to him.
Yes.
This asshole dad that who's the worst dad in this movie, Whitewood or Vic Morrow's dad, whatever his name was, Joey Turner or Whitewood?
Roy Turner. Who's the worst dad? Roy Turner, hands down. He slaps his child in public.
Good point. Right in front of his mom. I gotta tell
also us, another thing that you could never get away with in this
ever
age.
Ever.
Like
smacks him.
Dramatic. I mean, look at this. He just literally threw shit violently at kids and one had to hit the deck. And he's the hero.
And he looks mean.
Get
out there.
He's meant to be the good guy.
Did you know that Jimmy, the blonde-haired guy, is related to the Marx Brothers?
Yes, in real life. Yes. The one who looks like Harpo Marx.
Look like Harpo Marx. And the poor kid doesn't get a line in the whole movie. But look at Nath, though. He's like with his terrible collar.
There he is
and
right there.
That's him. With his cords. Did you have cords when you were a kid?
Yeah.
All of us did, brother.
I stopped wearing them, though, because an ex-girlfriend in high school.
Okay, hold on a second. This is like elementary school.
I know.
If you're still wearing them in high school, it's 1988. I don't want to see you wearing cords in 88.
Especially when I had heavy thighs. Dude. You should be wearing cords. You know, the vrit, vrit, vrit. I would wear that shit through because my thunder thighs would just rub on each other.
You should be wearing acid wash.
I should have because they went from cords to just pants in the middle there and shit.
See, this is where Buttermakers teach them now how to block a grounder.
And you also know? People are like, of course, this is the standard montage of mm-hmm. as the team builds itself. But I'm going to point this out again.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the standard team building montage was invented.
Mm.
This is, you ain't seen this in a good movie point. Before.
Good point.
And everyone steals from this template.
Good call.
But they did it first. Like, you know,
this is the first.
Remember they said even Rocky had a montage in Team America?
Right, right.
These motherfuckers invented the
montage. This is the first kind of ne'er-do-well kid team. Like we talked about Mighty Ducks, and there's 100 of them, Sandlot and
yeah.
whatever. But this is the first one.
Yeah. Those movies don't exist without
that. I love this too, that Ogilvy goes to the top and then Engelberg goes to the top. Here, just, like Engelberg just landed right on skinny little Ogilvy.
It's alternate universe Jane Silent Bob right there.
Which one is which? Oh, here's Silent.
That's true.
Silent Ogilvy.
It's true.
Sorry, Silent Engelberg.
Got the attitude of a Jay.
And I love this part where it's like, couldn't you have at least unwrapped it?
He was my hero.
He's so burnt
out. I would eat candy like that because he did.
Oh, see, where is that guy now? Hope he's still with
us. He's still around. I remember, you know, every once in a while, I'm like, ooh, where are the Bad News Bears? And they've done, like, get-togethers and, like, for the video and shit. They've brought the...
If I was putting on San Diego Comic-Con 2019 or 20, wherever we are, I would put together Bad News Bears reunion of the whole team and get as many of them as you can. I would get a picture with them. I would push people out of the way.
To get that. Like,
I did a Comic-Con in Jersey, Atlantic City.
Right.
And the only I cared about was Damien Thorne. Little Damien. Yeah. Harvey, whatever. And the guy looks like look anything like him.
The kid who played the Omen in the first time.
Yes. And like, I've been terrified of that kid for 48 years right. or whatever, 40 years. And when I saw him, I was like, can I please take a picture? I'm just Jack. I know you. I saw a picture too. He's an English guy. Yeah. I took a picture of him. And he still looks like Damien. I'm like, oh. Those are the type of people that I want to take pictures with because we grew up with them. I would go take a Bad News Bears team picture with all of these guys or whoever it was that would show up just for like, oh, it'd be so cool, right?
We're sitting in a room right now as we were talking about, I think, before.
Tell the story. Started. You got a great picture over your over the door here.
By Wonder Bros.
Looks like a painted picture of the final North Valley League Bears 1976. And it's a team picture of the Bad News
Bears. The
image
that closes this movie.
Right, and we've already seen them take the picture earlier.
Absolutely. But I reached out to him and said, hey, man, can you do – I commissioned him. I was like, I just want this painting of, like, the last image in this movie because it's so seminal and formative to me. And he was sending me pictures of its progress as it was going. And I was like, whoa, man, like – there was a moment where I was going to write back to him and be like, do me a favor, paint me in there as a child, like in the team. And then as a Deep Cuts fan, I was like, you know what? I didn't earn it. So I don't belong in the
interesting story.
And then so it exists here in the office, gorgeous piece and whatnot.
It's great.
It's one of I look at it every day and it always reminds me where I've came from. Not just like, hey, you saw a movie when you were a kid and you grew up and made movies. Good for you. But this movie's so deeply in my DNA that it's not just like, oh, this was a movie I liked as a child.
Certain movies this impact you more than that.
Yeah. This built who I became, built who I was as a child. Build who I'd become as an adult.
And most of the movies that we do on Talk is Jericho, like I said, Warriors and Kiss Me's the Phantom and Outsiders and even Sleepaway Camp 2 for my love of horror movies and this movie. These are not
is
just...
Is 2 the one with the dick in it or no?
That's 1.
That's 1.
2 is like, it's so much more cheesy and shady and shitty, but
is she still the bad guy?
Well, she is. But just Pamela Springsteen is the bad guy who's Bruce's sister, which is, yeah... You might want to watch it. It's the perfect example of an 87 slasher, tits and ass, cheesy.
Two
great.
Is over one?
Two. To me, two's better than one.
Is that right? It's like The Empire Strikes Back. Of Fleet for of me. Camps.
And so since this is my show, I like having movies that influenced me. Not just like, what a great film. Like, I still watch these movies once a year, twice a year, three times a year, whatever it may be. Because like you said, it's part of who I am as a performer. I'm not a director like you are, but as a creative person, as a storyteller, these still influence me.
So wait, end of Sleepaway Camp, the girl's on the beach and they pull back and they put a dick.
She's
on
got
her.
A cock, yeah. And yeah.
Do they like does Sleepaway Camp 2 open from that moment?
No. To be it's like, let's it's 10 years later, she's had a sex change. Now she's Angela Baker.
Are you shitting me?
No. There's no cock anymore.
But I mean, this is like, this is nuts.
Now she's a counselor at the camp.
Is it the same girl who played the girl?
No, it's Pamela Springsteen, who is
as Bruce. An older person.
Well, so the one that played the girl originally, I think her name is Felicity Rose.
Uh-huh.
10 years later, it's now Pamela Springsteen.
Right, right, right. Which
literally Bruce's sister. Like, dude, it's fucking Bruce's sister. And in that movie is Renee Estevez, who's Emilio's sister.
Holy shit.
There's like sisters across the board. And it's super cheesy. One of the best deaths of all time, where a girl literally gets shoved down an outhouse, a biffy, as we call them in Canada, with a stick. And she's dying from apparently being pushed into water that's filled with shit and piss. And then she comes up with leeches all over her, and then she dies. It's like, I'm sorry, dude. Like, it's gross, but you're not going to die.
It's defeated
swimming in shit water.
As a human being.
Right. It's not going to happen.
The second most famous I'm in an outhouse full of shit shot after Schindler's List was the moment. Remember in Schindler's List with the kids running around to hide? And I remember seeing that movie and I'm like, look, all of this is horrible, but the moment that you're hiding in a f-ing latrine full of shit and he gets into the shit,
mm-hmm.
and then the kids, there are other kids in the shit, and they're like, go away.
Yeah. Get out of this shit.
You've already committed to the shit, and then you get in the shit.
You're wearing shit.
Like, go to another.
Like, shit. Go to the shit house. Like, I can't get your break.
All of this sucks.
So now we're back with Amanda. So here's the thing. It's such a sad story, once again, about Buttermaker.
Oh, my God, that outfit. Look at her dress with the crop top, or the pippy top, as we call it.
So
the 70s. That feels like the 70s to me.
But also, too, like, here's another thing why Buttermaker's such a dick. She's like, you know, he helped her growing up.
Yeah.
He taught her how to pitch. He taught her how to throw. You can tell that he was a father figure to her. And then when he broke up with her mom, just fucked off.
Yeah.
And it's very deep-rooted pain for her that he just doesn't care. He's a jerk.
Or which she doesn't realize at this point. In her mind, she, like, first he comes to her out of the blue and she's like, oh, you fucking fucked off and blah, blah, blah. But then as they spend time together and he's relating to her and interested in her because he's got an agenda or whatever. She starts to mistake that for
wanting to be back in her life.
Yes. And it leads to one of the most heartbreaking.
Oh, good point, man.
That also is formative and shaping for an individual. Like there are many moments in life where a kid could feel betrayed by an adult. And a lot of them are a lot more sinister and horrible and damaging and shit. But in 1976, you're watching this movie. It gave you a sense of reality because you were like, and I was blessed. I didn't grow up in a house where I got smacked around as a kid. But this movie gave you a sense of reality of like, holy shit, like adults can't always be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and not in a way that he touches her or something like that, but he gets shitty with her. And he's like, don't you think I would have looked you up 2 years ago? Yeah. If I wanted that, I would have looked you up two years ago.
Yeah. He says it twice in a row.
Just to really.
I know. Someone couldn't think of a better way to put it in the script writing thing.
That's got to be choice, actor choice. He's like, I'm going to fucking button it with this.
Once again, you're dealing with. I don't know if Matthew ever won an Oscar for anything, but I'm sure he should have.
Yeah.
You're talking about a master. You mentioned Jack Lemmon earlier. Like, both these guys are just great. Like, he's so good at this. I don't know if he might have been the most affluent guy, wore like immaculate suits or whatever, but he's such a slob in this.
He plays schlub so well.
Like, his collar is up and he's just like, he's very unlikable.
And you know his kid's in the movie, right?
Matthau's kid?
Yeah, Charlie Matthau's in the movie.
Which kid does he play?
He's on the other team. I think he's on the Yankees. And it might not be the Yankees, maybe the Athletics, but he has the moment with Tanner where the kid goes, what is he? Hold your dick.
Go to the bathroom.
Go to the bathroom for you too. And then Tanner chases him around. That's Walter Matthau's kid.
He's got such a weird accent. Hey, Tanner, does he go to the bathroom for you too? It's like, was this kid 50?
He went on to be a filmmaker himself.
Really?
Yeah.
Charlie Matthau. Shout out to Charlie.
I love the parent shots. Think about this.
Giant shades.
They don't really interact like with the parents that much. If they make this movie today, there'd be some subplot about the parents.
Yeah,
like
good point.
School of Rock had a whole thing about parents. This movie, the only adults they need to tell their story is Buttermaker,
Taylor,
Roy Turner,
Turner,
and Whitewood.
Whitewood.
You know, Cleveland to a lesser degree.
And one of the most memorable parts to me, and we'll see it coming up, is after Turner slaps his kid.
Oh, my God.
The mom is waiting.
Yes.
And my mom didn't look like that lady, but kind of does. Same hair. And the we'll see it coming up. The crop top with like the high waisted
pants
like the denim the belly button. Bum denim bell bottoms, whatever. Like that to me was a really, she didn't have a line, or she might have had a line after. Like, you know,
she's like, you
son of a bitch. But that was a real memorable parent moment.
Yeah. And also, you know? Just as I was saying, like, this movie taught you that like not all adults can be trusted and they can betray you, so to speak. It also taught you that, but even if dad's an asshole, mom will be there.
Yeah.
That is a really tender moment when he walks away.
Especially for boys. Yeah. I love the point, too, when they get Amanda.
Look at that. And she's a killer. He hates Lupus so much.
He hates Lupus. But then in Breaking Training, he loves Lupus.
Well, he loves Lupus in the beginning of Breaking
Training. Yeah, loves him.
Like the Looper, he calls him. But here in this movie, like, he's got an arc with Lupus that's really touching as well. Like, this is where he starts to find affection for Lupus. Right now he's like Lupus, but later on he bonds with
but once again
him. That's also a part of being on the team.
As being on the team, there was always a guy that sucked, and I'm not saying I might have been
and they all before, suck on this team,
but this guy's the worst. Yeah. And not only that, he's very timid, he's got no balls. Like Tanner at least, he sucks, but it'd be like, well, I remember one time there's a big argument in the WWE locker room between Great Khali, who was a giant, and the Big Show, who was a giant, and they got in a fight, and the Big Show went, "You f-ing suck," and Great Khali went, "You f-ing suck too, bro," and it's like he's admitting, "Yeah, I suck, but you suck too." And the balls of that, I was like, "That's pretty great." Like, "Yeah, I suck, right. But you suck too." That is, we don't get that from poor Lupus. Like, there's just nothing. Like, they all suck, but Lupus is just taking it from everybody,
and is convinced. Of his,
he sucks.
Yeah. Ineptitude.
Right.
But is challenged by the end of this movie.
Right.
And gets a rare hero moment in this movie.
And it's amazing.
Yes.
But we'll get to that point. But here's what I love now is that they're getting back together. They're getting the team together. They've got Amanda. And now they've got Kelly Leak, who we've seen throughout the whole show. Shades, cigarette. What is he, 9? Smoke cigarettes at 9.
Well, he's fucking driving a bike, so he's got to be like what, 14?
And a motorcycle, and now
he's meant to be what, 12?
She's 12, so he's 13,
she talks 14. About him being like a year older,
and he's like, dude, he's like he's so small. But now they're at the air hockey game, and if she can beat him, he'll play on the Bears. If he beats her, she has to go with him to the Stones concert, which is still the best bet ever.
Kids, this is what Dave and Buster's used to look like.
Just look, it's an arcade.
It's just a series of pinball
look at the
machines.
Giant necklace on Kelly Leak as well.
It's bigger than him.
It looks like the neck thing that they wear in Running Man, that if you cross the line, your head will explode.
Oh my God, I just want to go back to this arcade.
And it's like, God, look at that. Like you said, this is Dave and Buster's back in the old days. Wood paneled walls.
Where's the video games? Right?
There's not.
Like, there's one kind of, I think, to her right behind.
And that's like early Pong.
Early. It's very, all, like that thing right there.
Yeah, yeah. That might be a change machine.
That
something.
Could be. You're right.
But Kelly, where do they find this guy? Like, he's such a, like, we used to, in Canada, we would call him a skid. He's such a skid.
They do that on fucking Letterkenny. They use that term, skids.
Well, that's real. So a skid would be a like a greasy hair, long hair, smoking, drinking, like no future skid.
Holy shit.
That's kind of what he looks like to me.
That's so weird. I would have thought that show created that term, but they just
they pulled that from the 80s in
Canada.
That'd
be like me going like, they invented, Bob and Doug invented the term hoser.
Yeah.
And they just popularized.
They might have, though.
I think they said they popularized.
I did not hear that term until they came out. But Skid and like half the stuff in Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah.
The only difference is like regions. Like Trailer Park is Maritimes.
Right.
So that'd be like, you know, Jersey compared to Philly compared to...
And Letterkenny is like farm country.
Gosh, like
Ontario.
Regina or something. Okay, gotcha.
Look at this kid. Again, this is also in an era where you can drive a motorcycle around.
No helmet.
With no helmet.
No license. No parents.
It just looked like, being from New Jersey and seeing this, even the nights looked amazing in California. Mm-hmm. You were like, oh my God. You can just drive around and go to arcades.
It's like Karate Kid. Like,
yes,
when he goes on that date,
you're like, why is this bad?
And then he goes on the date with her to that arcade place. I'm to like, I want to. Oh
castle.
My gosh! Like, I wanted, beg, please let me find a girl that looks like Elizabeth Shue to take her to an arcade.
That's also
neither happened, but I'm still hoping for it. And note, Buttermaker's windshield still smashed,
still broke. Look at how good this guy is with child actors. He spends 90% of the movie.
The director?
Yeah, no, Walter Matthau.
Oh, gotcha.
Acting, yes, with kids.
Yes, 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 yes.
And he's doing stellar career-defining work in a career that's already been defined many times over.
Yeah, exactly.
She had just won an Oscar, Best Supporting Actress, for her performance in Paper Moon. So in Paper Moon, when she was here on the show, she talked about being fed a lot of lines. Like, what was that like? And she was like, Peter would just be like, say this.
And being fed a lot of lines just means someone's off screen going,
say this.
My name is John. My name is John. Yeah. Here I am on the show. Here I am on the show.
You're doing a bit of parroting.
Right.
But by this movie, she's doing a bit of acting. Like, she's starting to come into her own.
But here's the typical story of, like, this amazing child actor. And it's very rare when, I mean, you worked with one with Haley Joel Osment on Tusk. Yeah. This is a genius, but to start at this age and get through to your adulthood, it's a tough time because she did have drug problems. And you know, I know that Ryan O'Neill apparently did as well, or whatever it was. To get from A to B as a child actor is very hard to do,
no doubt,
man. Right here, of course,
speaking of child actor, this guy who just you know, 86 shirt right there,
yeah. Brandon,
Joey Turner, who is Roy's son.
Brandon Cruz.
Well done. Oh, my God. Jericho, I love you.
What does he do?
Brandon Cruz was in Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Really?
He was Bill Bixby's kid on that show.
Must
the lead of that show. So getting him in this movie was a score for them. Other than Tatum, who was super famous from Paper Moon, he was the most famous kid in the show.
How old was he in The Courtship of Eddie's Father? Like 3?
9 or something.
How old is he now?
I guess I want to say 11, 12.
Oh, so that was the early 70s show.
It was the theme song was People Let Me Tell You About My Best Friend. It was like Bill Bixby was a divorced dad or his wife was dead. And so him and the kid had this like friendship
slash relationship. Let me tell you a quick story about getting put
in. He went into punk music too.
What? I've heard that name.
Brandon
Cruz. He's in something, Brandon Cruz.
I don't want to say the Dead Kennedys, but I want to say the Dead Kennedys.
I'll look it up in a second.
It's not that.
I love the fact that this is where we see, and this Lupus still has a snotty nose.
The this turn, is, too. Look at Taylor, yes, dehumanized in this.
Tanner movie. Realizes that Lupus is a kid, too, is a human being, too. I remember being put into the garbage can in the dressing room, St. Louis Blues, 1975. My dad played for the Blues. Mm. And Gilles Marat, Google him, pick me up and put me upside down, not sitting in a garbage can, head first in a garbage can as a 4-year-old kid.
As a sign of affection?
I guess, hey, kid, come over here. He's a French Canadian. I'll put you in the garbage can. And then he gave me a cigarette.
Canada.
Ah, Canada, yes.
A land of children old before their time. No. Holy shit, we hit more than halfway part.
Oh,
all right,
hold on.
It is right now 56 minutes, 58 minutes.
We got 45 seconds. Minutes left.
So at right now, hold on, I'm going to pause it there. Buttermaker has just tossed one of the Mexican kids a jock.
Right before that, one of the plot-turning MacGuffins is that Roy Turner tells Kelly Leak, you'll never be nothing, you'll never play ball. And Kelly goes, you know what? I'm going to play ball. Go fuck your ass. And speeds off into the night.
Roy Turner creates this very thing that threatens Roy Turner's
this
world.
Is the reason,
in the third
exactly.
Act.
And this is
he
the reason.
He creates his own enemy.
Wow. We're getting deep on this.
It's a deep movie. All right. So what we're going to do here is hand off to my podcast.
Yes. This is the end of Talk is Jericho. I mean, we've had a good hour. If you want to hear, and please, I implore you to hear the second part of this, the exciting second half of the Bad News Bears, go to the Smodcast. And my show comes out on Wednesday or Friday. When does your show come out?
Come out whatever. You tell me when, and then we'll just be up at the same
time. Well, my show will be out on Wednesday.
This is a two-parter, kids, man. You start on one show, you finish
this
on another.
This is really exciting. This is like Family Ties, Brady Bunch, Happy Days. Like Fonz has just jumped over the Chicken Shack at Arnold's. And pause.
This is a crossover episode.
Fonz has just jumped over the actual shark. And pause.
Will it happen?
Can he make it? Is he going to die? Find out Tomorrow, I could say right here, but we can't do right here. Well, right now, we'll do a double. Yeah. Right now, go straight over to the Smodcast.
There you go. We'll make it easy on them. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thanks for having me on your show upcoming. It's Smodcast. Do we have to do anything else? Just put in Smodcast?
Smodcast.com and they'll find us.
And there's also iTunes. I follow Smodcast. Yeah, subscribe. Yeah. So we're literally, this is unprecedented in the podcast world. We're literally going to stop this show. And as soon as we're done, you're going to go straight over to Smodcast starting now.